and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco, Grace Parra, and Dana Schwartz join to tackle the following questions. How do we feel about Kamala Harris? Why is people who have completely lost touch with reality such an important Republican voting bloc? And why is Joan of Arc absolutely not a badass? All this and more right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have a lot to talk about this week. So without further ado, I'm going to look up my friend. She is the former White House Deputy Chief of Staff under President Obama and the mother of two cats that are really misbehaving today. It's Alyssa Mastromonaco. Hey, Alyssa.
Erin.
Okay. So I'm going to give you one guess for what we're going to lead off with today. And it rhymes with Kamala Harris.
Is it? Kamala Harris?
It's Kamala Harris. Yep, perfect rhyme with Kamala Harris. Okay, so ever since Joe Biden announced that he was going to pick all women to be his running mate, all 166 million or so of us women were on tenterhooks waiting to see which woman would be the king of women. And on Tuesday, Joe Biden announced that he has selected California Senator Kamala Harris as, I guess, our... Is that how vice presidents work? She's now our king?
She's our king. She's our queen.
Yeah.
She's our
king
queen?
Of women. King, queen, whatever. Both terms can be gender neutral now. So her nomination for VP is boundary breaking in a lot of cool ways. She is the first black woman and the first woman of South Asian descent to be the vice presidential nominee for one of the two major parties in a presidential election, which is super exciting. She was raised by immigrant parents. She was raised largely by her mother, raising her and her sister alone. She's also married to a Jewish guy. She's like a rainbow of the American experience. And she was also a former DA and AG in California. Alyssa, despite the fact that, you know, there was a lot of celebration yesterday, I think there's something very dangerous about pretending that our preferred political candidates are flawless. And I think there's something disingenuous about hiding disappointment or some trepidation about our preferred political candidate. So, Alyssa, give it to me straight. How did you feel when you learned on Tuesday that Joe Biden had selected Kamala Harris to be his running mate?
So, Erin, I think that you and I both would agree that there were no bad candidates that we heard in the last couple of days. If the reporting was correct, and it was largely down to Karen Bass, hysteria fave.
Love her.
Susan Rice, longtime pal of mine, and Kamala Harris, we could not lose. Mm-hmm. Now, was Susan my dear pal, and was I, because of my palness and because I believe she is ready to serve, was I a little excited that it might be Susan? I was. I'm not going to lie. Did I, after talking to Karen Bass the last time, think that I could be Team Bass? I did. So I'm down. We need to win. Kamala's great. I mean, but I think that everyone is allowed to have their feelings and they should feel free to have their feelings as long as everyone understands that, like, it's fucking time to get up and get on.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, you know, as you know, because you got a text from me to this effect yesterday, I was driving through a part of Kansas where apparently nobody needs to use a cell phone.
Of all things.
I know. It was like 5 hours of just totally dead service. And we stopped at a gas station in a place called Goodland, Kansas, right off I-70. And at that moment, Josh had like a bar of service and he had a text. What do you think about Kamala? And it was like, oh, okay. Well, it was Kamala. My first feeling was that I was really hoping for a more progressive candidate, just because Kamala is a little bit more toward the center than my personal politics are. And she is, although she's somebody that I find really inspiring, and I think she did a great job in a lot of ways as AG of California. And she's been a great senator. She's been an attack dog, basically, on the judiciary. I was hoping for somebody who is a little bit more bassy in their politics. I really like Karen Bass. I was a big fan of Tammy Duckworth also. I think that she's got an incredible future ahead of her. She was sort of a dark horse candidate, Tammy Duckworth, but I would have been just completely over the moon if it had been her. But that being said...
And don't forget Tammy Baldwin. I almost forgot Tammy Baldwin.
Tammy Baldwin. The Tammys.
Love her
Tammy's
too.
Baldwin.
And... See, we couldn't have gone wrong.
Yeah, there's such a deep bench of women who are willing and able to serve that it's a cool moment, I think. A deep bench of women who come from all different backgrounds, different ages, different experiences, but they're all committed to getting Donald Trump out of there and trying to steer the ship in the right direction again. So that's pretty cool. So once that initial like, oh, okay, okay, it's Kamala.
All right.
Let's pivot to talk about how it's settling, because I think you and I had a similar experience. Alyssa, how has it settled with you?
So, you know, at first I was like, okay, okay. And then as the night went on and as I went to bed and couldn't sleep, I was getting super pumped. I really was. It's fucking great. It's huge. It's almost like when you think of it, if you want to paint it in an entirely upside, in terms of the women that he could have, that Joe Biden could have picked as he announced in March, it was like an embarrassment of riches. Everybody, it wasn't like you had to choose between two people and it was like an Alpo spam, which is worse. Mm-hmm. We had so many great women who I think because the moment had not really been like available before, I guess, for lack of a better word, there were just so many. And so I think that like I made my peace. I felt my gratitude for the women who it could have been. I felt super proud that it was Kamala. And also the more that you find out about her, as it's just about her, like not her compared to all the other women in the primary, or just like, who is this woman who's going to be the first, hopefully, woman to be vice president? I was stoked. I feel stoked.
Yeah, I was starting to get more and more excited as I was imagining her coming up against the type of person that would want to get in between the Democrats and taking back the White House. Like, I immediately looked up when the vice presidential debate is, and it is on October 7th.
October 7th, University of Utah.
University of Utah. I tweeted that people should write ass whooping in their calendars because Kamala Harris debating Mike Pence, I cannot imagine.
Delicious.
Oh my God. The one thing that I would say is, you know, somebody pointed this out to me, that Mike Pence is sort of a potato but stiffer when it comes to his sort of charisma. He's a potato in a dress shirt with short sleeves. But he's, you know, we can't set the bar for him so low that if he gets through the debate without crying and running off stage, that he's considered to have won.
Do you know what it made me think of?
What?
This is, I'm showing my age on this one, but when I was thinking about what the debate would be like, it was like that scene in Reality Bites when Winona Ryder says, vivisection, staggering understatement, or whatever it is. That's what I feel like it's going to be.
Yes.
And that's not raising the bar on her performance. Like people were, when I said that yesterday on Twitter, people were like, oh, you're like raising expectations. Shut up. Just shut up. She's going to kill him. It's like factual. It's empirical.
We're not raising expectations. She's risen the expectations by over and over again proving that she's like a relentless debater and a fierce questioner.
Yeah.
I think that having somebody who is absolutely not afraid and who will stand up to whoever steps to her is a really good quality for Joe Biden to have in a running mate.
And one of the things I think that you and I said during the primary, we talked about this a couple times, is that we felt that Kamala and Amy Klobuchar were the two people on the entire stage who came with a plan and executed it every debate. And I feel like that's a very good sign.
Mm-hmm. I was also excited about, you know, I was reading a little bit about her and I had forgotten about this, but she got California homeowners a really good deal.
Mm-hmm.
After the financial crash, she walked away from negotiation and a lot of money, but not enough money. And she ended up working with Joe Biden's son, Beau, to get a lot more money for homeowners who were negatively impacted by the financial crash. So she's a good negotiator. She's a good debater. She's a good questioner. She's a great speaker. She's also very ambitious.
And funny.
And actually cool in a way that most politicians are not cool. Now, that's not to say, you know how there's like that old saying that like if you're a 7 in New York, you just have to, you know, you add 2 if you go to any other city.
Yeah.
Out of 10.
Yes.
So I feel like in politics, if you're like a 9 on the coolness scale, you have to subtract 5 in every other context. Like, but I think on a political scale, like Kamala is like a 9 when it comes to being cool.
Definitely. Definitely. There was one story that I had read that made me feel warm inside. And it's when she called Cory Booker for his birthday, but switched to FaceTime, even though she had curlers in her hair, to show him how to make lentils properly. That's the thing I think makes her cool. She's like herself. Like what politicians usually, when they try to be cool, it's because it's like not in their DNA and it's just a fart in the forest.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard that before. No, I'm going to use it.
You're welcome.
I also... I also want to point out that her attitude towards women's health has been very forward-looking and progressive. Mm-hmm. Like, she hasn't let issues of maternal mortality and the racial disparities in healthcare in the U.S., she hasn't ever shut up about it, and that's great. She's floated the idea of making states that threaten abortion rights get their restrictions on abortion passed through the federal government before they're able to enact them. Mm-hmm. She's floated that idea, which is like an innovative way to handle states that are trying to very slowly chip away at Roe. I think that there are things that I will always feel like I'm to the left of her on, but she's the first candidate in a while that I think matches my views on women's health, and mm-hmm. I'm excited about her now. I want to pivot really quickly to some people who are less excited about her. I think as it was the date of Joe Biden announcing the woman that he was picking approached, I think a lot of people were bracing themselves for a deluge of sexism and racism directed at the candidate, depending on whether or not she was, you know, what racial group she belonged to. And now that we know that Kamala Harris, that she's a woman, she's South Asian, and she's Black, you know, there are some people who are not doing a great job of handling it. And I'm going to go ahead and say it's the usual suspects. On Tuesday on his show, Tucker Carlson. I think his name is it's pronounced Tucker.
Tucker's the long lost friend of Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson mispronounced her name several times on his show. And then when somebody corrected him, he kind of got real emotional. I think that Tucker might be about to have his period or something. There are a couple other Fox News hosts that mispronounced her name. I think Jeanine Pirro and C.N. Hannity both mispronounced her name. I feel like mispronouncing her name is going to be something that conservatives think is awfully clever, but I want to...
You know what? They also thought that making sure you made Barack Hussein Obama was going to... Guess what? Doesn't fucking work. They're so basic.
That's the thing. Okay, right. Alyssa, sexism is so fucking boring.
The most boring.
It is boring. So boring and hacky. All of the sexist jokes are the same jokes that they have been telling since before women had the right to vote. It is fucking boring. You know, when Donald Trump is like, oh, men might be disappointed in Joe Biden choosing a woman, yawn. That is
what?
So boring. Donald Trump calling yet another woman nasty. Really, dude?
Record time.
Fucking boring.
Get a new line. Hire a fucking retired SNL writer or something, but you're boring.
It's extremely boring. You know, it's also calling women mean, boring.
Whatever. Fuck off.
How many times have you been called mean?
I mean, honestly, I'm not like that, but a lot. Enough. Considering I'm like the nicest person I know. I mean, I have been called mean a handful of times.
I get you seem nice. Like I'm supposed to be mad. Oh, I'm not trying to seem nice. I'm trying to be a cunt right now.
Right.
Thank you for noticing. You know, here's the thing. I think that a lot of sexists and misogynists and people who really want to ruffle feathers of people who support the Biden-Harris ticket will come out with things that are boring, basic-ass, old-timey racism and sexism, because what they want is for us to get riled up. They want to trigger the libs. And so I want to do a little bit of a like, let's strategize about what is the most effective way to respond to really, really boring sexism. I mean, the what do you mean question is a good one. What do you mean by that is a good question.
Right.
I also think like pointing out that somebody is being boring is a fair way to respond.
I think we need a new emoji.
A yawn emoji? Like,
I think we need like a very illustrative yawn emoji that's like hand on head, perhaps. Like, I can't handle how bored I am. I'm going to faint, because it's I need something so that we don't waste our words. Why should we have to waste our words by calling out boredom, boring, stupidity, and basicness when we can just have an emoji do it for us? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the thumbs up emoji. I don't know. That means so much.
You repeated something you heard your bad dad say to you
in second grade. Iterate.
Yeah. It's like another thing. I think we also need a jerk off emoji, which the waving hand and the waving hand eggplant, I think, oftentimes conveys.
Oh, Lord. I didn't
jerking
know that.
Off. Well, I'm just freestyling here with with emojis. Calling her mean, calling her nasty, saying that somehow her ambition is a bad thing. Like, wanting to be president is the worst thing somebody who wants to be president can express. All of that's boring. And I think that when we notice it in people on the right, like Tuker and CN and
the Pyro,
Mrs. Pyro. Yeah, Mrs. Pyro or whatever. I think that we can pretty much safely just ignore what they're saying. But when it happens to somebody in our lives, or when it happens among more mainstream media people who will care, I think the best response is to just be like, that was hacky. Why are you saying that?
My favorite thing is, that's uncool. It's just uncool. I even say it to my niece when she's being uncool, and she's two. I'm like, JJ, it's uncool. Don't be uncool. That's what it is, because you know that all they want to be so desperately is fucking cool.
Yeah.
That's why they're trying out all of these like stupid hackish things, because they want someone to be like, do you see what Sion said today? It was cool. It's not. You're uncool.
Sean Hannity can never be cool as long as he has that hair. I have one final question before we take a quick break. Do you think that it was bittersweet for Trump to have to defend Brett Kavanaugh? Brett Kavanaugh, during his confirmation hearing, Kamala Harris was very hard on him, rightfully so. And then Brett Kavanaugh threw a fit because men are too emotional to lead. But, you know, during his time in the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh hasn't been the greatest justice, but he did vote against Trump in his tax return cases. So I thought it was kind of funny yesterday to see Donald Trump saying that what happened to Brett Kavanaugh was the worst thing in the world. Brett Kavanaugh, the judge who is trying to expose him as being like a liar and a fraud.
Right. Sorry about that.
Sorry about that. It's going to be. Oh, and we haven't gotten to the best little nugget.
What?
About Kamala. We haven't gotten to the best nugget yet.
Which one?
You know who donated to her campaign?
Oh, I think I know, but why don't you tell us?
Donald Trump donated to her campaign when she was running for California Attorney General. And so did Ivanka.
Feminist excommunicated forever. Ivanka Trump. And what did Kamala Harris do with their money?
What'd she do?
She donated it to a group that helps with human rights violations in Central America.
Okay.
She donated all $6,000 to a nonprofit.
Wow. Good for her. Okay, so we're feeling good about Kamala.
Yeah, we feel good.
We are continually braced for the deluge of dumb shit, but I think it's going to be boring. The sexism is going to be boring.
You know one thing I want to say about Kamala before we leave her?
Mm-hmm.
A fun fact I did not know. She's 5'2", which is exactly how tall I am.
What?
Which goes to show she's 5'2". 5'2". That you don't have to be tall to be powerful.
That she seems tall.
She does seem tall. No, that's the thing, is that maybe I seem tall to people. I don't know.
I mean, I'm 5'7". I would be. Ugh, I could
you're
carry,
just showing
I could,
off now.
I could carry her like a backpack.
Did you just call me a Smurf?
Yeah, I did. I did. Okay. I think
maybe
we're that
makes you Gargamel.
Fine. I will change my Twitter handle to Aaron Gargamel Ryan.
I can't wait.
Okay, let's take a quick break. I am really looking forward to what we're talking about for personal political. Alyssa, stick around. Everybody else, stick around. There are going to be some commercials, and then there will be more people to talk about a new subject. We'll be right back.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicollet Avenue, which is where Alex Pretty was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
Okay, we're back. We've gotten to the part of the show where we talk about a bigger topic that's in the news that's affecting our lives personally. We call it personal political. Alyssa's still here with me, but I want to welcome two more wonderful women who are joining the conversation. First up, she is a writer and the host of, I think, at last count, 10,277 podcasts, including Noble Blood and Popcorn Book Club. It is Dana Schwartz. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, a podcast because I live alone in a studio apartment during a quarantine. It's the only human interaction I get.
It's pretty much the bulk of my outside of my family interactions, so relatable. Up next, we have a writer, actor, and activist, Grace Parra.
Yeah, that's me. Sure.
I was like, I can't use hyperbole to describe her because I've already used...
Well, you could always use Nervous Little Pepper.
Nervous Little Pepper. Nervous Little Pepper, Grace Parra. There's a fussy grocery store in my neighborhood in LA, and every time I go in, there's like these like five peppers just nestled preciously on like a bed of straw, and they just look so nervous. And it's Grace Parra, really, basically.
That's me, just like quivering and a little spicy.
Guys, today I want to talk about something that I think about a lot because it's both fun and scary to think about, and it's also timely because on Tuesday this week, the winner of a Republican primary in a Georgia congressional race is a subscriber to a belief system called QAnon named Marjorie Taylor Greene. The district is, I think, a 25-plus point Republican district. So in November, we're about to have a congressperson who believes in QAnon. So in case listeners don't know what QAnon is, it's kind of hard to explain because I think it's like nuttier than Mr. Peanut's jockstrap. But
wow. Did you come up with that? That's good. I like it.
I did. See, nuts on nuts on nuts.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like a triple entendre. So basically QAnon is this internet-hewn conspiracy theory that a group of politicians and celebrities and the deep state are working in conjunction with each other to worship Satan and eat babies and molest children. So it's crazy, but a lot of people believe in it. I also, you know, President Trump has kind of cozied up to it as well. So we're about to get a QAnon congressperson in a time when I feel like we have a conspiracy theorist president and a lot of really, really outside of reality stuff kind of circulating. And Dana, I want to start with you. Republicans have been kind of quietly panicking about QAnon because they need dangerous conspiracy nuts who are totally unhinged from reality in order to win elections. Yep. That's an important voting block for them.
Yep.
Do you know anybody who's gotten caught up in QAnon? And what do you think its appeal is? Oh, you do?
Whoa.
Talk about it.
I don't want to like put it on the spot, but I have an extended family member who is like not crazy, but like to the point where like it's like hard for my dad to email him. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh no, you don't actually believe this. Like not full nut, I hope.
Not like jockstrap nut.
Not jockstrap yet. But like to the point where like I think my dad is like, we can't talk about politics. But it's impossible to argue with these people because it's like the opposite of science, where like science, if you get new information, you reevaluate your belief set. Where this is, you have your belief set, and then no matter what piece of information comes in, you twist it to refeed whatever theory you already have. Where if there's data, oh, well, the scientists are part of it. If there's a newspaper, oh, well, obviously the newspapers are in on it and covering it this way. Like, there's literally nothing you could do or say to convince them otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Trump has shared, as of a week ago, according to Vice, Trump has shared 90 tweets from 49 different QAnon linked accounts.
Yeah.
And there are 17 QAnon candidates that are on the ballot.
17?
At least 17 now.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
17 publicly. Who knows how many privately
exactly.
Right. Exactly. So I want to ask you, Grace, you know, apologies in advance if this question is leading. Mm-hmm. How fucked up is it that a racist, like, you know, the QAnon Georgia candidate, a racist who subscribes to a belief system that is completely untethered from reality and has been characterized as a terrorist threat is considered by mainstream Republicans to be more desirable as a congressperson than somebody like, say, Katie Hill. How fucked up is that?
Or even the neurosurgeon who ran against her, who is also super conservative, but not QAnon conservative. You know, not QAnon fucked up. It's the point at which QAnon goes from being kind of quirky funny to me, which, to be completely honest, it sort of has been in the past because, you know, you see some people with the big Q signs at Trump rallies. And yes, he'll tweet some things, retweet. He'll make some mentions of it. I've sort of seen it as this underground kind of, you know, community that I don't know anybody involved in it or anybody who subscribes to it. But the point at which we are electing people who are vocal, adamant supporters of this movement is very frightening. I think, however, to me, it comes from a place of all of us just wanting to be childhood sleuths. I was thinking about why people would be interested in QAnon. And it's like, okay, well, if you think about it, we grew up reading books like Nancy Drew, like The Westing Game, one of my favorites, like Scooby-Doo even. We've seen these shows where kids are just like being cool and discovering things that the rest of the world doesn't know about. Or even like The Da Vinci Code. You remember how big that was a few years ago?
Or even like non-mysteries, even something like Harry Potter. You're like, oh, there's a secret hidden world. We don't know about it, but there's something hidden.
Yes, people love that. So it's been ingrained in us from a young age to seek that out in some ways. So I don't blame QAnon people for wanting there to be some conspiracy, but I don't think there is in this case at all. And the strange web in which they tie things together that just don't exist is like, it's like a bad Nancy Drew. It's like bad Hardy Boys. It's like,
you shut your mouth. There are no bad Nancy Drews. Alyssa, back me up here. I think that's an interesting and very generous read.
Yeah, yeah.
On what's going on. Alyssa, I mean, this isn't the first political conspiracy theory. You've worked in politics for a while. So, I mean, how do the wackadoodle conspiracy theories that you had to deal with when you were working in politics, how do they compare to our current moment? Has it gotten worse, or are we just imagining that it's worse because we're in it right now?
Birtherism was, in fact, a conspiracy theory for fucking sure. Mm-hmm. And that was like, here's the thing about birtherism. It was so fucking nuts. It was so crazy. On the face, and so easy to disprove the fact that Donald Trump was saying Barack Obama was not a legitimate president because he was not born in America, fucking moron, that like they had to go deeper underground. You know what I mean? Like the birtherism was a little too on the nose, a little too out in the open. And so now they've taken that deep racism, anti-Semitism, all the bad isms underground with some like weird hand signals, right? There's a QAnon hand signal, isn't there? I think there is.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't want to know what it is. My brain is.
I'm sure it's like on par with the white supremacy hand sign that everyone's like, no, it's just an okay symbol. No, it's not. And so now they've just tried to make it like a little bit more subversive, little bit of a harder club to get into so that they can all just talk to each other and not have like normal educated people disabuse them of their warped, obtuse beliefs.
Mm-hmm. From what I've seen on the internet, there's also like layers to it where there's like Facebook memes about child trafficking and the numbers are completely false and fabricated and wrong. But good people feel good about sharing those.
Right.
And that's like a gateway. Mm.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I was reading today that Facebook is like the main place where this all lives. And the algorithm basically reinforces. It's like, you like this. Do you want to watch this thing that's more extreme? How about this thing that's more extreme? And Facebook does it too. It's like, you liked this. How about this thing that's that like that, but a little bit more? How about this that's like that, but a little bit more? But at the same time, you know, we can't pretend that QAnon came out of nowhere. Like Alyssa, you were saying birtherism was a big time fake conspiracy theory. And there's been a lot of like writing and research about conspiracy theories. Like my old colleague from my Jezebel days, Anna Merlin, has written a book about it called Republic of Lies, which I recommend. She's super smart about it. There's also people that are basically on the conspiracy beat, like Ben Collins and Brandi Zadrozny at NBC News, Kevin Roos at The New York Times, Will Somer at The Daily Beast. These are people who are reputable journalists who are documenting what's happening within these worlds. And one of the things that I think people kind of miss is there is a context to it, because it is true that the government has covered things up in the past and lied about things. And it is true that we're living in a time now where we don't know the entire truth about what's happening. And it is true that the government has done horrible things to people, like the Tuskegee experiment, for example. But it just feels like right now we're in a time that, like, our president is actually a conspiracy theorist. And he doesn't do anything to, like, discourage people from believing the craziest things possible. But going back to conspiracy theories that aren't quite so terrorist, what is your favorite, like, conspiracy theory from history that you kind of view as benign compared to what's going on with QAnon?
I'm sort of into, this is not from history, it's kind of modern. I think the 5G conspiracies are fascinating. I think anytime there's a conspiracy that ties in technology taking over humanity and technology sort of, you know, running amok, or like, you know, the robots are coming for us kind of thing. An example of that also, this is really more in like internet meme creation category, and maybe not so much a conspiracy, but in the same vein. Do you remember Momo from like a year ago?
Yes.
Momo was that, oh my God. I
simpler
love,
times.
Simpler times. And yet it was, okay, so tell me if I'm describing this correctly. But this meme Momo is this like very creepy female face that has bulging eyes and like straw like kind of dry black hair, and the message contained within this Momo messaging is was apparently intended to make kids either commit suicide or do some sort of self-harm. And it was stuff that only kids could see, that adults couldn't, even though adults could also watch the videos. And like, I remember Kim Kardashian reposting things about
oh,
this
no.
on her Instagram. Yeah, it got really out of hand. And then I truly don't know the origin of it, but it was all the rage for like 24 hours. What a conspiracy. What a moment.
So I know a little bit about Momo, because whenever anything like this happens, I'm like, what's really going on here?
Yeah.
An artist made a sculpture of that face,
yeah,
basically, and that face was used as Momo, and it was more of an urban legend. But then something happened in the UK, and it got repeated and became a big news story that was really based on kind of a non-event. It was a little bit. It was like a case of mass hysteria. Dana, what's your favorite conspiracy theory type belief?
I love sort of like innocuous pop culture conspiracy theories. I like the one that like Avril Lavigne is dead and was replaced by some random person, which is very funny to me.
That's awesome.
Have you heard the one that Coca-Cola invented New Coke on purpose to be bad, but then so they could go back to old Coke with like cheaper ingredients and people wouldn't taste the difference?
Oh, that's a good one.
One that I believe, because that's like a corporate. Corporations are shady as fuck.
Yeah.
And then I like dumb ones, like people saying like Stevie Wonder isn't blind, which
I love
is funny
that one.
To me.
Yeah.
I love that one. Alyssa, what's your favorite conspiracy theory?
You know I love Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany.
Of course.
Well, I have known about this one for a while. I can't believe I get a chance to fucking talk about it. So in Germany, there is a conspiracy theory that Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, is actually the daughter of Hitler. How could this be, you ask? How could this be? Okay, Angela Merkel's birthday is July 17th. A leak of Stasi documents indicates her real birthday is April 20th, the same as Hitler. Born in 1954, how can this be, you say? Because apparently there's a theory that fucking Hitler froze his sperm. And that Angela is the resurrection of the Nazi. And there are also these like Angela Putin conspiracy theories that she's really a Russian double agent. I hope someday I have as many vivid conspiracy theories about me as Angela does. But yeah, she, conspiracy theory, she is the daughter of Hitler.
Wow.
That's
I mean, how do you even
one.
How do you even argue with that if somebody comes to you?
And the question is, how did I stumble upon that years ago?
Have you guys seen the documentary on Netflix called Behind the Curve?
No.
It's actually fascinating, just as like a window into like conspiracy theory mindset. It's about the subculture of people who truly in their heart of hearts believe that the earth is flat.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like really, and like, the documentary is good because at first it sort of like focuses on the people who just sort of are doing it to like troll and like have fun. And then it really gets into the people who like truly believe this, this elaborate conspiracy. And it's like, it's a very empathetic documentary, which I like that it's not like making fun of them, but like, they just want to feel like they're a part of something. Like they do sort of, Grace, what you were saying, like they want this like importance of like, they cracked it and they're the only ones who know. It's like their lives are so sad and boring and uninteresting that they need this like thing to feel like they're a part of.
We all want to feel like Tom Hanks in the Da Vinci Code. We all want to be symbologists. We all want to feel like there's a code that we cracked. That's what we're going at. By the way, this is why I'll Be Gone in the Dark, the documentary on HBO, is so fascinating, because it really, it's really ultimately about a group of people who just wanted to crack this mystery of who the Golden State Killer was. I don't know if you guys have seen the doc. It's fantastic in a lot of different ways, but one of it is really because it just showcases people who, when they have limited time on their hands, free time, what they do is they choose to try to find who this murderer is. And we all just want to be part of some things. We all want to be part of secret clubs.
I mean, you know that's the number one recruiting tool of the Ku Klux Klan. Is that they find people who don't...
That makes
they,
sense.
It's true. It's true. That they find people who, especially, say, like, veterans who have just left the armed forces, who come from this place of community, who then don't have community. And they entice them with this, like, we're going to be your family. We're going to take care of you. And it's, like, not really the racism that draws people in. It's the, like, looking for people who are kind of like you and going to make you not feel alone. And then it spirals.
I mean, I think... The human desire for like connection and society is something that like I think about a lot, because and I'm not saying that more people should go to church, because I think organized religion is really corrosive in a lot of contexts. But the number of Americans that have that participate in organized religion has gone down like really, really significantly over the last decades. And for a lot of people who did go to church, it served as like a community hub for them. And in the absence of community hubs and public spaces and things that people would gather together to do, it feels like there's a lot of lonely people out there. And it seems like loneliness is the first step to getting swept into something like multi-level marketing. You know, it seems like people get swept into multi-level marketing partly because they want to feel like they're in a sorority. I feel like, you know, QAnon, people want to feel like they're in a secret detective club, like you pointed out, Grace. Political fringes and conspiracy theories, like once you find somebody who also believes in something kind of wacky that you believe in, you feel a sense of camaraderie with them. It gives you a sense of belonging to a community. Like, for example, my favorite genre of conspiracy theories are fake deaths. Because I think like faking your death is like, I mean, look, you shouldn't fake your death. But like
there on are the other hand,
on the other hand, it's fascinating when people do. Like, for example, there's this whole community of people online who believe Michael Jackson faked his death. And like there are some weird publicly available discrepancies, like the whole his death was weird, but he was a weird guy. He could have just had a weird death, or you know, but or people are clinging to the belief that he faked his death. I love the idea that Andy Kaufman, deeply weird genius who also seems like a real asshole, faked his death like as a joke, and now he can't really
can't come back
from that one unless he was going to do it like. I mean, in a really spectacular way, because that would be kind of hilarious if we're being honest. But, you know, whenever I meet somebody and they want to talk about like, oh, what if Andy Kaufman faked his death? Like that's, oh, hey, we've got something to talk about. Like it's a fun thing for us to talk about. Do you guys know anybody who has gotten into something kind of culty, kind of gone off the deep end that wasn't QAnon? And like, how did you deal with either trying to bring them back into the fold of reality or just deciding that they were a lost cause? And when do you make that call?
I have a relatively recent experience with this with a friend who I have not talked to in maybe 9 months or more because she joined a quote-unquote religious community that is and she actually brought me to what I now look back and realize was essentially recruiting meeting like 2 or 3 years ago, and I knew it was a recruiting meeting by like midway through when they were trying to sell us on the different tiers that you could join and how much money it would take to start to become a part of this community, the different perks you would get to have, you know, one-on-ones with the, whoever the guru was in charge. It has made my relationship with her essentially disappear. And I don't know who she's become. I have not spoken to her in a long time. It's very sad to me because I feel like she's been kind of indoctrinated in a way that I wasn't expecting. She and I grew up Catholic. So both of us definitely know what it's like to be part of that community, Aaron. I think you mentioned the idea of faith tying into this is dead on. In some ways, as adults, we seek that. But because many of us have had experiences where we adhere to certain religions early on in childhood that we then move away from, that space needs to be filled with something. So I understand her wanting to find community in this way, but she's unrecognizable. Unrecognizable. Not bad, not somebody that I couldn't communicate with, but just exhibiting characteristics that I know I'm kind of being vague here, but there is kind of vagueness to it, though, you know, at least mm-hmm. in my experience, unless you go down the same path of people who have gone into these, you know, communities, there's a lot of unknowns.
There's a QAnon like support group on Reddit, and it's like the saddest thing in the world. It's like QAnon orphans or something like that, where people talk about genuinely feeling like they lose the people close to them. And it's like a really profound loss.
Yeah.
QAnon casualties is the Reddit subcommunity if people are looking for it. And it's genuinely heartbreaking because you have to, it like feels like someone you love is being taken over by like an alien being.
Yeah. Scientology, I know, has groups like that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, where do we draw the line between somebody? Okay. So I think a lot of people have recognized sort of culty behavior in people who have suddenly, you know, hopped aboard the Trump train and just let it drive off a cliff and been like, yay, we're on vacation. but I think, you know, I think for a lot of people who've witnessed friends and family members subscribe to a belief system that makes them unrecognizable, like you can't just say like, okay, well, my dad's a lost cause, you know, fuck him.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, how do you hold on to people who you love, who seem like they're really losing it? Like, Alyssa, have you had any experience or counseled anybody through going through something like that?
I mean, I had a really a really bougie friend who was swept up into one of these, like, and I'm not dismissing it because I've done it myself, breath work. I've done it myself. But it was like a weird, expensive-ish kind of, I don't want to say cult, but it was a group. And it made her talk about kind of weird things. And finally, I was just like, I can't talk about this. I feel like there are some real people with real problems in the world who could maybe like benefit from some of what you're doing here. But I didn't want to be judgmental either because it helped her through some things. But it was a weird period of time. I mean, I just, I was mostly like, I can't talk to you about this, which is not helpful.
Right.
But I was like, let's talk about something else. I can't talk
There's
about
no
this.
There's no way to logic out of it. There's right. that like, God, that phrase, like it's might be like a P.T. Barnum quote. But like, it's easier to fool someone than convince someone they've been fooled.
Whoa, yeah. Dana.
Yeah, and I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
Nobody wants to be a dupe.
Right,
nobody wants to be like, you know, going up to someone and being like, hey, idiot, you made bad decisions, you got fooled, and now you're fucked, and you're an idiot. Like,
you spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on a garbage product. Good job.
That's why, Aaron, to your question of what do you do, I have... At least with my experience, this personal experience, to give this person space seems to be the best mode of action. I'm not denouncing them altogether. I'm not like writing an angry letter saying, fuck you. Yeah, you know, you spent all this money on garbage or whatever. But I'm just allowing this person to take the space that I think she clearly needs to take. Now, I think you bring up a good distinction, though, when it comes to somebody closer, like a parent, let's say, like a sibling. Maybe you do the same thing in as much as you can, you know, offer space and maybe like some sort of message of like, listen, I'm here if you want to talk at any point. If not, that's also fine too. I don't know how much more proactive you can be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and then there are the sort of belief systems that are actively, I mean, there are belief systems that are weird where it's like, okay, my friend's in a church that's super weird and now there's a glassy-eyed look to her. That's weird. But then there's like culty beliefs that are actually corrosive and socially bad. Mm-hmm. Anti-vax people,
for example. Oh, my God.
Sorry. People who think COVID is a hoax and that masks make you sick. One of the hardest things about grappling with these weird times that we're living in is that we've like people have just decided to customize their own reality as though that's like a possible thing to do. And sometimes their customizable reality is something that's actively harmful to other people. Do you think like shame works in bringing these people back around? Like what works besides them actually experiencing a bad outcome as a result of their own beliefs?
You have to make a Facebook meme of the opposite thing to get them on board. Just look with like numbers where it's like the people who are like so concerned about human trafficking that then think like Tom Hanks is ordering children
from Wayfair or whatever.
Wayfair. Yeah. And like Wayfair right. things like, I was listening to a podcast. They were talking about the numbers that people use, like the most inflated numbers of like 800,000 children are missing in America, where it's like, if you believe that number, which is like crazy and like has children counted multiple times, like every time a child runs away from home, it's counted. And like every anonymous call is counted. 99.8% of those children return home. Like something like that, where it's like that number is not like strangers snatching children off the street. It's like 16-year-olds who run away and then come back. The facts aren't there, but people do not care, because isn't it so much sexier to realize that you found Wayfair shipping children in cabinets?
Da Vinci Code.
I mean, I think the one thing that has been sort of effective, and this has not happened with any members of my immediate family because I'm lucky. Nothing bad has happened with any members of my immediate family, but people in my like family circle or people like in kind of extended spaces, I think the only thing that's been effective is we're not talking about that, or like I'm not talking about that with you, and drawing a boundary. Like, look, you can have your own thing, but that thing that you have stays with you, and it doesn't affect me, because I will like I can't talk to you about this, you know.
I will say in the documentary, the Flat Earth documentary, the strategy that sort of seemed to work in that, and they talk to psychiatrists, and like is not shame based, is like very accepting, and you come like you're on their side and you're like, okay, well, explain this to me, and sort of like let them talk their way out of it from a place of support. But that takes like so much patience and mental energy that like not everyone can do that. That's like genuinely like how to cult deprogram someone from like a professional.
I admire, I don't know that I can think back to a time when I have been able to say with confidence and then walk away from a situation, a phrase like, I don't want to talk to you about this. And then for things to be okay afterwards. And that might just be a confidence thing that I have, but I wonder how to effectively communicate. Maybe this is like, I need like confidence 101 lesson here. How do you effectively communicate a boundary and then still be able to communicate with them about other things? That's really more a question.
This may not be the exact right answer, but I do have a friend who at one point said positive things about Trump, like since he's been president. And it was so shocking to me that I was ready to like lurch at her. And then I decided to lead with curiosity. Because here's the thing. I am not excusing any of it, but there is a difference between someone who says, you know, I have a lot more money in my bank account since he's president, versus someone who's like, someone who finally understands that white people are perfect. Like those are two different approaches. So I led with curiosity and, you know, it turned out she was like misinformed. She had been on some bad Facebook pages. And by not shaming her, by being like, well, wait, tell me more. Like, why do you think that? Like, do you think that's actually true? That helped. It worked a little bit. I mean, I she's not voting for Trump, so I guess I'm a fucking star. But
yeah.
But I think you're right. If you want any sort of approach whatsoever, it can't really be shame based, because then they're like, this is exactly what the QAnon people told me was going to happen. They told me that my friends were going to tell me I was stupid and this, this, and this. And then it's like, check, check, check. They're right again. And so I feel like, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like the best thing you can do.
Don't you think it's crazy that for every crazy conspiracy out there, there's like more than one person who believes it? Like the beauty of culture is that there's a pot for every kettle, but the terrible thing about our culture too is that there's a pot for every kettle. There's always going to be somebody who agrees with the most out there theories.
And internet culture, that's the challenge of internet, where it's like, in before the internet, if you believed a crazy thing and happened to get a pamphlet in the mail about it or whatever, like, okay, there's 12 people who believe it. But now you can like find your little community and make little nice looking font memes about, about whatever and like spread it and have your community very effectively commute. That's the egalitarianness of the internet becomes troubling in that sense because like numbers look the same whether they're true or false on the internet.
Yeah.
That I don't, that sounds so dumb in a non-profound way, but you know what I mean? Like
totally.
It's people who aren't trained to like look for sources and don't care about that.
Yeah.
Things that are objectively false can be presented as if they're true on the internet. Mm-hmm.
You bringing up pamphlets in the mail made me think, made me remember that Ron Paul exists. And I was just thinking like, God, I wonder if Ron Paul is like, I was born 50 years too early. I could have been the king. I could have been king of the crazy now. I do think, you know, to end on a kind of high note, you know, let's say that we have at least one QAnon congressman who by the way, thinks that she's going to come blazing into Capitol Hill and get Nancy Pelosi out of there, which please try it. I would love to see it. I would love to see you try. That one of the best legislators in American history will be definitely be taken out by a stringy haired Georgian. Sure. Anyway, but one thing that's good is that sometimes
a Momo haired Georgian.
Momo.
It is. Now that I know what Momo is, she's straight up got Momo hair.
She's got Momo hair. But anyway, so but the thing is, like, sometimes the best way to get rid of these kind of underground things is to just like expose them to sunlight. You know, like sunlight's a great disinfectant. And seeing this
Did you just make that up?
No, there's a whole foundation around it called the Sunlight Foundation.
Sunlight and bleach actually get rid of COVID.
Yeah, sunlight and bleach. Sunlight and bleach in all the holes in your body. Mm-hmm. But I think exposing something like this to sunlight will kind of mainstream the fact that it is ridiculous and it's none of the things that they're saying are actually true and that it's a flawed belief system and QAnon will, you know, come apart at the seams, hopefully, and unravel until the next crazy thing to come along that people are able to glom onto. And then we'll have to do another show about that. But, you know, I think that it is a disturbing culty belief set, but I don't think that it can really live forever. I hope.
Oh, your lips to God's ears, Aaron.
Knock wood.
Knock wood. Okay, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to do I Feel Petty.
If you love Positive America and want more of my political analysis, you should subscribe to my newsletter, The Message Box. I'm Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to Barack Obama, and in Message Box, I break down what's actually happening in politics and what it's going to take to beat Donald Trump and MAGA. If you follow every poll and every twist and turn in the campaign, Message Box is for you. This isn't just hot takes. Every edition delivers clear analysis, behind-the-scenes insight, and practical strategy you can actually use, whether you're working on a race, organizing your community, or just trying to win the argument in your group chat. So if you're listening to this, hit pause, go to your browser, and head to crooked.com/yeswedan, because I have a special offer for Crooked Media fans. You'll get 20% off a Message Box for an entire year. So go to crooked.com/yeswedan.
Welcome back. We've reached almost the end of the show, but this is the part where we really get serious about things that really don't matter all that much. It's called I Feel Petty. I'm going to get started this week. So as people who follow me on social media or talk to me know, we've been driving for the past like few weeks. I haven't been back at home, just been on a big old road trip. And so I've been to, I think we're going to have visited 17 states on this trip. It's a real big trip. Amazing. It was like visiting both families and then returning home kind of in a like circuitous way. And in every state, look, I live in Los Angeles now. I'm used to the LA stare where you enter a business. Everybody turns and looks. They look you up and down to see if you're someone important. And I'm not. So they go back to their business. In the Midwest and literally everywhere else. In New York, they don't even look at you. In LA, they look at you just like a perfunctory. Important? No, bye. Everywhere else that I have been on this trip, you know, from the wilds of Pennsylvania all the way down to the wilds of Missouri to the nothings of Wyoming, When you walk into a place, people stop, turn around, and stare. Unabashedly stare. We as a nation have a staring problem. And it's not just me being like, people stare at me everywhere. I watched other people stare at other people coming in. Like, I stared at the starers to see if the staring was something that they did. There's too much staring. When somebody comes in and you want to know who they are, just glance real quick to see. Because staring is a really rude way to greet somebody. Say hi if you're going to say hi. Or don't stare if you're not going to say hi. Staring is not an appropriate way to respond to somebody entering a business or a place that you're sitting waiting to pay for gas or whatever.
Do you think that the stares have become elongated because of mask use? Like, in other words, we're only seeing a third, maybe half of one's face now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. But I think most of the places, I've been to a diverse enough array of places, like a gas station. You would not expect to see somebody at a gas station off the interstate that you know. So, like, you don't need to look at them being like, do I know you? I can't tell because you got the mask on. I just think that people need to do a better job of, like, not staring. Don't stare.
You're very pretty, Erin.
Not maybe with the mask on. I paint a very scary mouth on it. And no, I mean, it's like I was saying, it's not just me or people that I, you know, I've watched. That's what happens every time somebody enters a place. Everybody turns and looks for like 2 seconds too long and then goes back to what they're doing. And it's not, don't do it. The LA stare is obnoxious too. I don't like that, but I've totally given up on the fact that LA will always have that sort of superficial, are you important element to it. But the rest of the country, you don't do it. Uh-huh. Don't do it. Uh-huh. Don't be worse than LA at this thing. Be better because you are better. You can be better. I have faith in you. Okay, that's my I feel petty this week. Who wants to go next?
I got it.
Okay.
Mine is, so I do a history podcast called Noble Blood. And so I get a lot of people talking to me about history, which I love because it's my favorite thing to talk about other than like TV shows. But a thing that really annoys me, the bee in my bonnet, is when people describe historical women as badass.
Oh, agree. Agree.
Oh, yeah.
And people do it a lot. They're like, oh, she was so badass. And I find it really infantilizing. And anachronistic, obviously, but like that's even besides the point. Like, I find it really infantilizing and oversimplifying. And people are like, oh, but she was badass. She, like, you know, wore pants and fought a war. And I'm like, okay, well, one, those are, when people say badass, I feel like they tend to mean like exhibited stereotypically masculine traits. Uh-huh. And then that's why they're worthy of us talking about them. Mm-hmm. And I just want to shake people and be like, okay, even women in history who had stereotypically feminine strength are worthy of us talking about them. And there's a reason people don't describe men as badass. Just like, oh, Lincoln was so badass. Like, yeah, because it sounds stupid and infantilizing and oversimplifying. And women are human beings. And I understand the impulse to get people excited about talking about women in history. But I hate that as a society, apparently the only way we get excited about women in history is pretending that they like wore leather jackets and kicked people.
Yeah.
So just like if you feel the need to describe a woman in history as badass, just like take a moment and think and be like, okay, well, what am I trying to communicate here? Because saying badass doesn't mean it.
It's like nice. It's a meaningless word. It's like saying nice. She was
Or interesting.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
Was it fucking mean? Nothing.
I mean, next time you talk about a male historical figure who was maybe in good shape, just be like, and he had a perky little ass.
Yeah, perky little ass.
Perky little ass.
But he didn't smile nearly enough.
Grace, you want to go next?
Okay. My I feel petty is a little bit petty and a little bit pragmatic, too. I can't do any more streaming services. I'm tapped out. There's a new one. Every day.
Yep.
Sorry, Peacock. Great programming. Awesome. I can't do it anymore. I heard about Shudder the other day. I love horror films. Huge fan of horror films. Apparently, there's this thing called Shudder that's just horror films. Like, you know, thousands of catalog of thousands. I can't do it anymore. I also can't do any more streamers that don't, and this is where it gets petty, that don't provide an additional service beyond just content. So, like, Amazon, you know, it's great that I can order toilet paper and then also watch some cool shows, but unless a streamer is also a florist or, you know, I can an insurance company, or, you know, I can watch Peacock and also buy shoes. I'm tapped out. I can't do it anymore. I don't know what we're going to do. Now, this is where a big conglomerate can come in, scoop them all together, and just make cable 2.0. I'm ready for that. Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is an example of like technology coming along and being like, hey, we've got a good idea. And then everybody tried to do the same idea over and over again. And now there's like 50 good ideas and it's too much stuff. And it just makes it worse than it was before.
Yes.
Remember, we were it's all like, worse. We're going to cut the cord. We're just going to pick and choose what we want. And now it's like, HBO Max, okay, fine. Because of I May Destroy You, fine. I'll get HBO yep. Max. And the South Park catalog, fine. I know Dana disagrees with me on that one.
But. No, I honestly don't. I like South Park fine as a show, and I love the movie. It's the fans I don't like.
It's always that the
fair
fans.
Take.
It's always
it's like
the, fans.
The show is good and fine, and like any piece of art is its own thing, and it's always just like people who make it their personality.
I think yeah. you should tweet something bad about Rick and Morty and see what happens.
I love Rick and Morty, and now I feel like I have to be embarrassed to say it, where I'm like, I like Rick and Morty. But I'm not like a screeching man boy.
I've downloaded 3 specific different streaming services because things migrate now.
Yep.
Which is another annoying aspect of it, because it's like, okay, I did this one because it has this show. And then that show will be my gateway drug into whatever else they're doing. And then they'll move it to somewhere else. And it's like, okay, now Disney owns this. Mm-hmm. Now I have to do Disney. Mm-hmm. Now I have to do, I agree with you, Grace. It's a lot.
It's too much. It's too much. I'm over it.
It's too much. Alyssa, do you want to bring us home?
Yeah, mine's short and sweet. Donald Trump needs to learn how to put his makeup on. I cannot stand. He wears so much. He is so specific about his hair. And there's always, like, no matter where you look, this, like, stripe of white. Like, the hair and the makeup, uh-huh. Never the twain shall meet. And it's like, honestly, just fucking blend. You know he doesn't do it himself. Who is he paying? Who are the American people paying that can't fucking blend his makeup? Just fix it. It's too much.
A beauty blender. Those things have been trendy for years.
Even I have one, okay? And I think we all know what that means.
I mean, it's not even like white. It's like the color of the inside of my arm.
Yes.
Which is like, it's like baby pig color. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Translucent.
It's dead flesh. Yeah.
It's not even baby pig. Yeah. It's like formaldehyde preserved dissection baby pig.
Fetal pig.
Fetal pig.
Oh, we're bringing it home. Oh,
We're bringing it home. Alyssa, you're 100% right. Is it possible that his makeup artists hate him?
That would be a delight.
That's for
sure. But there has to be another reason. Like, maybe they don't want to get too close to, like, his weave or whatever is going on with the hair attached to his head. I don't know. But just fix it. Just fix it. Just fix it.
I will say that, you know, after, you know, living my entire life watching women in politics be covered based on their hair and makeup in a way that's, like, sexist and rude.
This is my point.
It feels so nice to finally be able to talk shit about a man's hair and makeup. Love
it. Because no woman would leave the house with that fucking situation going on. Ever.
That's true. That's true.
So just fix it.
Certainly not our vice president to be.
No.
No, never.
No.
Exactly.
No.
Kamala's makeup is always perfectly blended.
It is.
Flawless.
Absolutely.
Never seen a harsh line. Never.
Look, if you can't manage your own makeup, how can we expect you to manage America, Donald Trump?
It's a great litmus test, honestly.
He can't unite his face and his hairline. He can't unite America.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. On that note, that's our show for today. Dana, Grace, and Alyssa, thank you for stopping by. Thanks to you all for listening, and there will be more hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a production of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Brian Semmel and Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now. Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a five-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.